Your name?
Lorena Andrade.
Where are you from?
We're from El Paso, Texas.
And what brings you in front of the White House?
Well, we're in front of the White House on a hunger strike. And we're here because we're from the border, and the border region is getting a lot of attention now because of the drug wars and the violence, particularly in our city, was Ciudad Juarez. But El Paso and the whole border region is actually one of the poorest regions in the United States. We have high unemployment. For example, in El Paso, Texas, with the North American Free Trade Agreement, we lost more than 35,000 jobs. And really the only structures in our community, and in particular in our community, were those factories. So we have housing projects, you know, and those factories. And when those factories left, we were left with nothing, with just abandoned buildings. We don't have, for example, any infrastructure rec centers or libraries or a school for adults. We don't have any of those resources. So as women, and there was nothing happened to replace that. The government never brought new jobs. They didn't bring any good retraining programs. So as women, when we saw our community that was so devastated by the economic decisions, and now with the violence, we had to make a decision that we were going to renovate our communities ourselves, that it was up to us to create jobs and to create a more stable community. So we began to build, for example, daycare centers and cafes, and now a marketplace, even a trading company. So in order to provide jobs, and really all of that infrastructure is really a school for our community to go and discover, hey, what is it that we want to learn? Where do we want to work? What are the pieces that, what is it that we need to construct in order to have a complete community? And as women, we've taken it upon ourselves to build every one of those pieces, no? To reconstruct what was destroyed, really.
Talk about a few of those pieces. You have an import company to bring food. I mean, it's the focus of it, what is largely based on allowing and helping women to create and own their own businesses.
Yes. For example, in our marketplace, we have a whole grocery area, and we have that is also promoting nutrition, health and nutrition in our community. So we have like more long-term goals as well. It's not just selling a product, but really, you know, instead of just, for example, giving a class on diabetes, which is how to prevent diabetes, which are also important. But then what do you do with that information? I mean, how do you create a space in a community so we can actually put that into practice, no? Bettering the health of our people. For example, in our community, we have the same ideas. For example, a woman has a right to her own business, right? But in our community, she has nowhere to study about or figure out how to start her own small business. So we had to create the same organization, the same women have to create the school and create the curriculum so she has a place to learn that. We also had to fight for our marketplace so we can incubate her business there, you know? And then also we want the products that we sell in our mercado to be fair trade. So we started a network of indigenous women artesanas in Mexico, because the women in Mexico are also saying we have a right not to migrate, and we have a right to sustain our families not by working in the maquilas, but on something that is based on our traditions and our culture as well, so we can protect our community and our culture in that way. So they while they were learning how to prepare the product for export, the women on this side of the border in El Paso were learning how to import the products. And we also started a trading company so we could facilitate that, the importing of their products as well. So like that's an example, and that's just so one woman can have, or a woman can have her own business. So that's just an example that, you know, if we have one simple idea and maybe other people take that for granted, we actually have to build all these structures from scratch in order to be able to implement that one idea. And that's really the theme in all of our marketplace. I mean, if you're going to plan for a community, you have to know its history. In order to do that, we had to develop a museum that does oral interviews and that collects oral histories and start to do exhibits and encouraging the people to you know, archive our history. So every idea that we have to actually build all the background work in order to be able to put it into practice, no?
And El Paso, Texas is right along the border.
Yeah, for example, our marketplace is like two blocks away from the border.
Mm-hmm. And what you're doing seems to be to uplift women and communities on both sides of the border. But then I think about the militarization of the border, which maybe has the opposite effect. Can you talk about that effort that's going on?
About the militarization? Well, I guess our position is also that a militarized community doesn't you know, doesn't translate into safe communities for women in particular. So we're having to deal with a lot of the violence on both sides. Many of the women have family on both sides of the border. We have violence, obviously, in Ciudad Juarez, and many of our families are affected by that violence. But then we also have the violence in our neighborhoods, no, in the And we think that if we, that our strategy is not only to arrest all of our kids, you know, not to hurt all of our kids, but to actually develop the infrastructure so that they have options and that they have a better future, so that they can actually grow up in a safe community. And I mean, that's really, it's a long-term strategy, but we believe that it's the only strategy that in the long run will actually help us sustain our community and be able to provide a safe place for our kids.
There was a front page Washington Post article a couple months back, I guess, of a woman, and she was in Arizona, mm-hmm. A Latina woman, peering through the blinds of her apartment. Her husband not working, her son not well, afraid to go outside. This is, you know, in the United States of America. Yes. Can you talk a little bit about the militarization and the fear that is being instilled in Latino communities?
Well, the fear is, for example, there's checkpoints around the city. There's checkpoints on the outer skirts of the city, like in the county. For example, sometimes they'll put a checkpoint right as school is getting out. You know, they do things like that. So the community has to organize and call each other, hey, there's a checkpoint in a certain area. You know, they don't necessarily have to do that.
In that case, you'd have to get a call. You'd have to figure out a way for a parent to sneak around or to be able to pick up their child.
That's why the organizing of the community is important, so we can protect ourselves in that way. Also, a woman can come home, she'll miss work, for example, and it'll be because she's trying to figure out where her husband is because he went out and never came back, you know, and then figure out later that, you know, he was deported, you know, and just, you know, and so some of the women here also have, some of the women in our organization, for example, their kids and themselves are on this side of the border, on the U.S. side, and their husbands are on the other side of the border. So it divides a lot of our families.
Lorena Andrade, is what, day eight?
Eight.
Uh-huh. Of the hunger strike.
Yes.
What do you hope will come of this hunger strike, and you know why you're in front of the White House mm-hmm. protesting each day, not eating. What do you hope will come of this?
Well, the women on the border are disposable. No, the women on the border were basically invisible, so we had to come all the way to Washington. One of our demands is that a border commission be established so that there's more consistent funding for the border region because it is the poorest region in the United States. But I think that, you know, there's not a lot of, we're not getting negative response on that because, of course, it would be more money going to certain areas, right? I think the real battle is going to be is whether those resources are going to go directly to women's organizations along the border. No? And if there's going to be that vision of this administration that, you know, we can battle this out, but at the same time, it could just be money that goes to the same agencies, just like all the stimulus money now is just going to the same agencies, the same colleges, the same thing, that never really get to a whole population that is being ignored. So the real battle is this administration or this government going to fund the women themselves, you know, the organizations of themselves, because are they going to have faith that we're going to be able to continue to develop our communities? And that's really it, you know. For example, they could spend a certain amount of money on something and they'll think that that's a good price for that, you know, and that that's the money it takes to develop certain projects. But when it comes to women's organizations, like, do you really need that much? Aren't you asking for too much? You know, there's always this attitude, like, if I give you that money, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to misspend it? I mean, you know, with very little money, we've been able to create almost an entire structure for our community where we're beginning to develop it. So that's really, I think, the reason of the hunger strike. I mean, that's really what we're challenging the administration on, is are they going to give that money directly to the women's organizations? And is it not going to be coming through all these different agencies? And then at the end, we're not going to see any of it. That's really the battle.
And you're meeting with different governmental bodies from what, Department of Homeland Security to uh-huh. Department of Agriculture, because mm-hmm. you have issues with being able to import some of the fair trade produce you were talking about earlier.
We're meeting with HUD, for example. We're meeting with, I think the Treasury, we're meeting with different entities so that they can actually go and have a summit or at least have a working meeting in the border area, specifically in El Paso, Texas, so that they can begin to figure out, okay, how are we going to get funding to these communities? And also so they could see an example of what women can do along the border, that despite the poverty and despite the unemployment, you know, we're actually like hope, you know, we're building something new in the midst of all that destruction, you know? And so it's important for them to go there and see it. And I think that we're actually going to be able to accomplish that part. The other thing we're battling for is immediate funding, immediate sustainable funding to these women's organizations, because there are a couple of organizations or several organizations that if we don't see any funding soon, I mean, we can't sustain all of this level of work just on volunteer labor. There has to be an immediate funding so that we can continue on this struggle and we can continue to build that. So that's why the underlying thing, and even if the people go and the government entities go down to the border and they see our work, but are they gonna, you know, follow up with the resources that are really necessary to continue that kind of work? Because I know that when they go, they're going to, and when they go visit other organizations, they're impressed with the work that is happening there. But does the investment follow? I mean, that's the real question.
Lorena, you spoke a couple nights ago at St. Stephen's Church. It was an amazing night. And I think one of the things you mentioned, it might have been one of the other speakers, I think it was you who talked about the model that you're looking at being what happened in Appalachia. Mm-hmm. Some decades ago.
Yeah, there's an Appalachian commission for the Appalachian area, I think in the 60s. And so that was established because of the high poverty level that exists there, obviously. And there was money designated for that. And the numbers indicate that it has been improving at a certain level. So we're saying that the same should happen for the border, that a border commission should be established. And actually, there is a border commission that is already established on paper, but there's no resources and there has been no money given so that that actual border commission can function and so that investment can continue, can actually go to the communities. So it exists on paper.
I was just thinking there's also a lot of violence in Mexico, and I'm guessing that's carried out by men as well. I know the U.S. has serious interest there and guns and military and... do you have any comments on the violence that's taking place throughout Mexico?
Well, how can I say? A lot of the economic policies, like in order to change, in order to implement the North American Free Trade Agreement, one of the conditions was that they were going to do away with Article 27 of the Constitution, which was one of the victories of the Mexican Revolution, where it was like communal lands, ejidos as they're called. With Article 27, that did away with all of that. And there was a lot of privatizations of the state-owned companies. That's why we would say that NAFTA was like a death sentence to the indigenous people of Mexico, or a death sentence to really a lot of the campesinos. That caused a lot of people to be without land. That caused a lot of people to get rich overnight as well. And that caused a lot of the mobilization, that caused a lot of the instability in Mexico, as far as we see it. Just like NAFTA affected us, we lost all of our jobs on this side of the border, at least all of our factory jobs on this side of the border. So all of that restructuring and also the maquilas going into Ciudad Juarez, I mean, you could be working you could be a young woman working in a maquila hours on end and, you know, six, 7 days a week, and you're still living on the outskirts of Ciudad Juarez on a house built with cardboard and lamina, you know. So it's not those they just came to destabilize our community on both sides of the border. So those economic policies, sometimes they get promoted like it's going to better a community, but it's these, like, again, this invisible population that really suffers. Like they say, for every economic decisions, there's winners and there's losers. But we also always seem to be on this losing side, and it's always the population that seems the most disposable to the system, or in our case, women.
Is it that destabilization which then, are you saying, then leads to the violence that's been seen?
Yes, and because of the drug policies, and sometimes we don't know if there are two opposing sides. You know, I don't know who's making more money, the drug lords, or I don't know what you call them in English, the narcos, or the drug war, you know, machine itself, you know, like the anti. So there's a lot of people making money in that, and I'm not sure that they want to stop making money. But we know that despite all of that, we have to continue to build our communities regardless of what comes our way. No?
Any final thoughts you want to share?
I guess I would just share that that women on the border are not disposable. You know, that we can't just be thrown on the side of the road and be abandoned. That we actually can think and we can plan for our communities, and that we deserve investment in order to do that. So that's it.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.